This is the RD Perspectives Podcast, hosted by Daniel Agudelo. An exploration of multiple perspectives on topics related to psychology, leadership, and learning and development. In this first episode, we will be exploring the why behind this podcast. What are the reasons that motivated me to create RD Perspectives? Then, we'll get started on the exploration of organizations. What are they? Today, we will focus on one perspective that has dominated organizational management practices, the rational approach. Welcome everyone to the very first episode of the RD Perspectives podcast. I am super excited to finally get started. It is something that I have been meaning to do for a while. And to kick off today, I would like to begin by sharing some of the reasons behind it. So, my professional background is in human resources, mostly focused in learning and development. But I've had multiple HR roles outside of learning and development as well. I've been very privileged to work in global and regional roles in organizations in South America, where I am originally from, to North America, Europe, Australia, Asia, and I am now based in the Middle East. As a learning and development professional, I have facilitated learning interventions to a wide range of people, from senior executive leaders to frontline colleagues in over 20 countries worldwide. So being exposed to global organizations has been truly rewarding, but also intriguing, particularly because of the similarities in some of the situations I've witnessed and some of the stories I've been told. Some of these as really good examples of organizational success, but also very real examples of organizational failure. So, reflecting on these situations and stories, I've seen cases like once a very reputable and successful global organization that under new top leadership introduced multiple change strategies with a very strong top-down approach focused on rapid change, including changing the values of the organization, moving away from what used to be a very warm, united, collaborative way of doing things to a very competitive and controlling mindset with an obsession to try to measure the impact of every action performed by teams. As a result, what was once an example of positive organizational culture with strong bonds between people became fragmented by the toxic, overly controlled approach of the top leaders who constantly changed direction, confusing everyone. On top of their focus to find mistakes in everything that employees did, especially at the headquarters level, neglecting psychological safety, ultimately resulting in a significant loss of market share value and a massive loss of key critical, but also competent talent that could not take the pressure, volatility, and toxic culture anymore and ended up leaving. The teams who once felt empowered, engaged, and really contributed to the organization became discouraged, demotivated, and disappointed when they realized that they spent their work days making different versions of PowerPoint decks, plotting some sort of new strategy, responding to the demands from top leaders, but deeply knowing that none of those PowerPoint decks would ever result in anything. I've also seen the example of a huge global organization that successfully managed the repositioning of some of its brands from upscale to the luxury market. During this significant change, this organization focused on providing clarity on the intended company vision, making sure that clear processes were introduced progressively, spending time training their teams, particularly focusing on what the new reality could be, how their roles were expected to change, to increase certain standards, and building an environment where people could openly discuss these transitions. This organization of European origin in the hospitality sector has grown exponentially, having more than 110,000 employees today and continuing to grow, definitely becoming a market leader across multiple geographies. Both of these stories are important because they are tangible examples of the complexity involved in organizations, especially around factors like strategy, leadership, followership, communication, and change. Precisely on the topic of organizational change, research has shown that only 2/3 of change strategies in organizations are successfully realized. So both of these cases can teach us a lot. Now, my academic background is in psychology, and specifically, I am interested in cognitive and organizational psychology. I decided to study psychology after I had spent a few years in HR, because I personally felt that there was this notion back in the day, and especially around the human resources community and leaders in general, that because of being in a HR role or being in a leadership role, then by default, we know a lot about people. But whenever conversations about people happened, what typically emerged were assumptions, conclusions, and narratives that were mostly linked to someone's experience and own implicit views. I wanted to know more and challenge my own assumptions. And this is why I decided to study psychology in Australia. While doing so, because of my focus in learning and development at work, I then pursued cognitive psychology, which is concerned with the study of internal mental processes like perception, thinking, memory, attention, language, problem solving, and of course, learning. Then, driven by the fact that talent management in a business environment is also complex, I decided to further educate myself in organizational psychology. Now, organizational psychology has really helped me understand multiple ways to look at behavior in the workplace, both individually and group-based, drawing on research not only from psychology, but also from anthropology, cultural anthropology, sociology, among others. Things like employee motivation, retention, employee value proposition, organizational change, strategies on leadership and followership, learning and development, attraction, retention, all these dimensions around people that can have a very critical impact in organizational performance and should be part of the discussions in organizations beyond the HR department. During COVID times, I wanted to leverage on the fact that I was spending a lot of time at home. So I also decided to learn coaching in a more structured way and became a certified ACC coach by the ICF. And in designing and implementing multiple learning interventions, especially at a senior leadership level, I also focused on psychometric tools. For example, I'm a certified Hogan coach. After these years of study and research, while still working full-time, I have to confess that while I loved learning academic, scientifically based theories, frameworks, and philosophical views about individuals and groups in the workplace, I've noticed a huge disconnect between academic knowledge and real-world organizational practices. I think academic work is often presented somewhat more complicated than it should be. And in the real organizational world, there may be a preference to neglect academia, especially if we think about the overwhelming presence of formula-like solutions presented as knowledge that have the tendency to simplify and reduce organizational factors into small step-by-step miracle solutions, in my opinion, prolongating issues that affect organizations. I mean, just go online and type a quick topic of interest about organizations, and a huge amount of stuff just shows up with these attractive and magical recipes to fix everything that could go wrong. So the purpose of my podcast, RD Perspectives, is precisely help bridge academic work, and that is the R for research, then apply to organizational reality, the output in real organizational work practices, and that is the D for development. I see development as both process and outcome. Now, this podcast is not about giving miracle recipes, step-by-step or quick tips to fix organizational issues. I actually think that such approach, which has been predominant for decades, has led to false positives, to practices in organizations under the belief that if you apply the 5 steps to do this, the 8 steps to do that, ending up in making organizational actors believe that their organizations are in better shape than they really are. My approach in this podcast is to present multiple perspectives around a particular topic. These perspectives will be anchored in the R from research, so I'll present some theoretical conceptualizations, depending on the topic being explored, but also possible examples of those perspectives in operation, in action. These perspectives will be varied, sometimes overlapping in some ways, sometimes completely opposite, or perhaps even completing each other. My intention is that listeners are encouraged to embrace multiple perspectives in a pluralistic manner, so that when they are designing strategies, action plans, initiatives in their organizations, they pause and think to consider some of these different ways to achieve their goals inspired in varied perspectives. This also means that I will do my very best to not provide a preferred approach to doing something, but rather focus on the implications of each perspective presented so that the listeners can connect and decide what could work best for them and their situations. Now that I've covered my intro and outlined what to expect from RD Perspectives, our first topic for today is, what are organizations? I'll be focusing today on the most dominant perspective that is used in the management of organizations, the rational approach. However, over the next episodes, I will be presenting other perspectives on defining organizations. I'll start by arguing that people in general are concerned with making organizations better. It happens a lot when I speak to friends and acquaintances about what is going on in their workplaces. They describe projects, initiatives aiming to improve their organizations. Examples like digital transformations, organizational changes, efforts for reskilling and upskilling employees, projects on organizational design, and more recently, many of them are engaged in activities around leveraging on artificial intelligence to work smarter. I think most people would also agree that these initiatives to improve organizations are necessary and important, especially considering the environment in which organizations operate today. What was once used in the 1980s to describe the focus of military training in the United States, the term VUCA, referring to volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity that soldiers are exposed to in the context of war, has become a frequent description of today's business landscape. Rapid shifts in markets with heightened competition, geopolitical reorganizations, global crises like the pandemic, technology that advances at a faster pace than people's ability to adopt it, in a truly globalized world, represent threats and opportunities, adding pressure for organizations to redefine their management practices. Several times, though, these initiatives assume that we understand what organizations are. And so if we have such understanding, then improving or fixing things might be easier or at least more manageable. But beyond our own definitions of organizations, Western management perspectives have influenced for long the way we manage organizations, especially positivism. Positivism is still a dominant philosophical approach to knowledge. While foundational thoughts of positivism are associated to the Greek philosopher Plato, modern positivism emerged in the 19th century as the notion of knowledge conceptualized through a scientific lens gained relevance. The positivistic view assumes that knowledge is true and legitimate when it is derived from rational, logic, and evidence-based outcomes. This implies that the use of introspection and intuition are not acceptable ways of knowing. This school of thought argues that just like the natural world has certain laws representing true knowledge, for example, in the physical sciences such as mathematics, chemistry, physics, there are laws that govern what is true about these sciences. Social knowledge must be viewed and researched in the same way as well. Here, I will introduce one word that is important when presenting perspectives. The word is ontology, which in simple terms is defined as the nature of existence, the nature of being. So the ontology of the positivistic philosophy is characterized by certain principles, like reality is made of facts that must be revealed through empirical evidence, that the scientific method is a reliable way to acquire knowledge, and that truths about something can be measured objectively. So why learning about all of this? Well, research on organizations is heavily dominated by this Western positivistic philosophy. Under this reasoning, organizations exist as a composition of structures, processes, people, behaviors, and outcomes. The rational approach, derived from the positivistic view, has influenced organizations to prioritize evidence-based management practices. For example, the use of rational-based operating models, data-driven decision-making, and the role of leadership, in which leaders are responsible to establish logically the best way to manage organizations based on measurable factors. In this philosophy, organizations should use the scientific method by coming up with hypotheses that can be testable and replicable to arrive to objective conclusions about how things are. Examples of these can be an organization researching how organizational structures may influence employee behaviors, or how leadership styles may have an impact on performance. Another good example under the positivistic view is how organizational change is conceptualized. Here, organizational change is typically organized in planned stages. In fact, a popular model by Kurt Lewin, first published in 1947, is still sometimes taught in leadership trainings, outlined three stages: unfreeze, modify, and then refreeze. This is not an exclusive model distilled from these planned change approach. There are several other authors with multiple similar stage-like change models. A similarity from all of them is that change in organizations is driven by the leader's vision and strategy, which is executed through step-by-step action plans and measured through some pre-established variables. So, as I describe this, I would imagine you can think of examples in your own organizations in which this approach is utilized. In fact, in my introduction, the first example I provided about what some may consider organizational failure can be a representation of this positivistic approach to organizational change. There are many theoretical frameworks that are used in organizations that have emerged from this school of thought, such as life cycles theory, theological theory, psychological theories, and organizational development theory. We will be covering these individually in upcoming episodes because each represents some interesting aspect of organizational life. While this is the dominant Western approach to seeing organizations, criticism and disappointment with this approach, and particularly because research shows that, for example, in the context of organizational change, in which change is planned in stages, simplified by action plans, and measured through objective outcomes, the literature shows that in reality, this approach does not have a high success rate. This means most change initiatives following this approach have been reported to have failed. Some have argued that positivistic views are too simplistic and reduce organizational reality into fragmented variables that do not represent the complexity of organizations. In fact, some authors have argued that the positivistic evidence-based approach to organizational reality is limited, because what the rational approach considers as evidence is selective. Also, because positivistic evidence-based approaches devaluate other forms of knowledge, such as narratives and stories produced by people. I would like to highlight here a great learning resource, an article called Against Evidence-Based Management for Management Learning by Kevin Morrell and Mark Learmonth from 2015. An important challenge to this approach is that while it is tempting to see organizations as a set of organizing components that are easily controlled by managers, it precisely may neglect the critical role that people play in organizations. It may diminish the human factor. The rationalistic approach sees leaders as the key drivers for organizational success, lessening other aspects of power dynamics. Leaders have certain traits and attributes, almost in a heroic-like way, and they're supposed to resolve and drive the organization. While yes, there are multiple leadership styles, and by the way, we will unpack these in other episodes, Nonetheless, the positivistic focus is still the leader as either in its most authoritative way, a commander, or in its most selfless way, a servant. Critical theories are now challenging the role of leaders and their importance, some placing a new focus on the followers, some arguing for a bidirectional relationship, and some encouraging distributed leadership in which power is fully decentralized. Well, that also may sound very tempting. What are the implications in terms of ownership? And if all power can be distributed, is it then possible that leadership is everything and nothing? So how do we see this rational preference in practical attempts in organizations? Think of the organization that may become obsessed with endless action plans and initiatives, all very well written in paper, but very little application in practice. The type of organization in which project trackers, matrices, KPIs, or OKRs as systems of control end up accounting only partially for what needs to happen. In fact, some organizations are so obsessed with this that can be operating under a state of active inertia in which the same past practices, patterns, and behaviors are used despite the need for change under the supposition that there is evidence for the success of a practice that happened in the past. It is important to highlight that the positivistic approach to organizations has also resulted in a cumulative progress of important practices that have enabled success. For example, building rational, strong cases, proof or concepts for organizational initiatives, and using multi-sets of data to distill insights on organizational performance are critical aspects to understanding organizations and deciding assertive courses of action. So the goal here is not to move fully away from positivism as an enduring approach to managing organizations, but rather understand that it provides only a partial view based on rationality and logic to organizational life. In our next episode, we will explore a whole different way to see in organizations. We will move from the positivistic lens to the constructionist philosophy. Here, the main assumption will be that organizations are not objects with exact truths to be discovered, but rather productions of people's attributed value and perceptions of organizational reality. We will unpack how, under this notion, organizations are not fixed compositions of things, but rather ongoing constructions in the process of becoming.